We also saw in two cases the return of travel, hospitality, and gifts. It's coming back, folks, and it's being used as a more common technique, notwithstanding all the push for compliance and controls in this area.
Global companies face unprecedented risks and challenges in today's economy. To mitigate these legal and economic risks, companies are rapidly embracing and elevating the importance of robust ethics and compliance programs to promote positive corporate citizenship. On Corruption, Crime, and Compliance, you'll hear from industry leaders and insiders about how to create effective ethics and compliance programs that will mitigate risks and maximize financial performance. Here's your host, Michael Volkoff.
Well, hello, everyone. This is Michael Volkoff, and we're here for a review of 2024 FCPA enforcement and compliance. Last week, we talked about sanctions. Today, we're going to talk about FCPA enforcement. Well, let's start first with, and if you've ever attended my webinar on this, I always like to start with the numbers, and we'll go through the numbers. We'll also talk about how it was sort of a moderate enforcement year, although the penalties went up significantly annually. But the enforcement actions, again, underscore the important compliance strategies that we've been advocating for many years. And we also saw the DOJ's new whistleblower program supposedly launched now with very positive results. But let's go through some of the numbers and some of the headlines. First, we saw a doubling of fines and penalties over 2023. DOJ and the SEC doubled their output from about $800 million to about $1.7 million. We had two declinations, which I'll talk about. DOJ's individual criminal prosecutions increased over 2023. SEC brought the first individual case, which was announced with a settlement. And we had one corporate monitor who was assigned in the Raytheon case. Interestingly, and sort of under the radar screen, was DOJ won four criminal trials of individuals. What a record year. Four trials, four victories. And we saw the return of a blockbuster case. How do I define that? By a top 10 case, and that's Gunver for $661 million. Let's see some of the highlights. As I mentioned, DOJ prosecuted eight entities, including SAP, Gunvor, Trafigura, Raytheon, Telefonica, Bitmining, McKinsey Company, and AAR. We also had two declinations, Boston Consulting, Proterial Cable, not on an FCPA case, but a criminal division case. The SEC prosecuted five entities and four individuals, and those included one that was settled, three part of the Adani Group case, which had eight criminal indictments, four individuals. The five entities, SAP, Deere, Moog, Raytheon, and Bitmining, we're going to talk about those cases, as well as Trafigura. By the CFTC, they had one case, one corporate case. Okay, so I mentioned total fines and penalties were about $1.75 million, 2023, $818 million, 2022 was $1.4 billion. When I said $1.7 million, I meant $1.7 billion. So they doubled the $818 million, and they exceeded 2022, which was $1.4 billion. Here, we had $1.7 billion. I mentioned the corporate compliance monitor. I mentioned also the return of the blockbuster case. The total fines was an increase, the highest amount, over the 4 years of the Biden administration. 2021, 2022, 23 were lower than the amount we had here, $1.75 billion. Still, 2020 stands as probably will always be because of the Goldman Sachs Malaysia case, 1MDB, $5 billion was that year in terms of total fines and penalties. Top 10, I mentioned Gunvor came in at number nine at $661 million now. That's the first case to hit the top 10 since 2022, when we had Glencore, which came in a little bit higher amount. So we've seen another top 10 case. Individual criminal prosecutions, 21 individuals were indicted by DOJ, eight of which, though, were in one case, which is the Adani Group case, the India case, where they'll be in extradition proceedings for a while in that. But remember, DOJ is always pushing the individual prosecutions and accountability. I have some thoughts on that. DOJ won 4 criminal trials, like I mentioned. First against Mr. Faggioni, the former Comptroller General of Ecuador, Javier Aguilar, a Vito oil and gas trader, Glenn Ostemel, a former oil and gas trader, and Manuel Chang, the former finance minister of Mozambique. No cases were brought under the new Foreign Extortion Prevention Act, and I wouldn't expect to see a lot of those since money laundering already carries a bigger penalty of up to 20 years. 2024, like I said, was a big year in terms of individuals. 21, that's higher than 2023 for DOJ, lower than 2022 and 2021. I think this year, 2025, we may see it go up to 30 or so in the year. That's just my prediction because there are a lot of cases going on in terms of DOJ. Let's talk about the top lessons learned and some key takeaways as we go through this. One is DOJ closed out the prosecutions, I think, of the energy commodity trading companies, Gunvor and Trafigura. High-risk area, obviously, involving state-owned enterprises, energy, and great incentives to engage in bribery. But we also saw the airline industry in multiple cases involving South Africa and state-owned enterprises as well. We had a weird case, BitMining or 500.com, which was bribery of Japanese officials, which was orchestrated completely by the CEO. As usual, we had third-party due diligence failures. We also saw some interesting techniques on circumvention of internal controls through overpayment of vendor invoices. And that, I think, is we got to look at that because that was a new and pretty nifty way that they funded their bribery scheme. We also saw in 2 cases, the return of travel, hospitality, and gifts. It's coming back, folks, and it's being used as a more common technique, notwithstanding all the push for compliance and controls in this area. So let's start with Gunvor, a top 10 FCPA case, $661 million, $98 million of which went to Switzerland. Gunvor was required to enter a guilty plea, and it was a decade of bribery only in Ecuador involving Petroecuador. Third parties and shell companies were used. The case, though, and this is the pattern that I'm seeing, is we're seeing more and more cases that are brought first with the cooperation of the individual, then against the company. And usually the theory is that you bring a case against a company through voluntary disclosure, and then they cooperate, and then you identify individuals and prosecute those individuals. What we see here in many of the cases is it goes the other way. The individuals cooperate, and then the individuals bring the company, and DOJ finishes the prosecution off with a huge company settlement. Now, the Gunvor bribery scheme involved bribery for oil-backed loans that were won through tenders, third-party bribery payments, and, of course, luxury gifts. And Gunvor, in this case, failed to terminate third parties who failed to even respond to due diligence reviews and audit requests. They didn't respond for 2 years, and it took Gunvor 2 years to shut them down. There was no monitor imposed, and Gunvor earned a 25% discount, even though they didn't voluntarily disclose. We also had the Trafigura case closeout. Trafigura pled guilty, paid $126 million, settled with the CFTC for $55 million. Bribery in Brazil to secure Petrobras contracts, what a surprise, over a lengthy period of 2003 to 2014. Like our great criminals, they tracked on a spreadsheet and with emails with coded language. The spreadsheet had the amount of bribes and the contracts they were getting. Thank you very much for that piece of evidence. Thank you very much. DOJ's case just became a little bit easier. Now, we also saw the closeout. And as I mentioned, DOJ at the end of these cases put out an industry sweep press release, basically touting their going after the energy commodity trading industry, which led to 6 companies and 20 individuals being prosecuted with a total recovery of over $1.7 billion. Pretty good for DOJ. And that shows you again, we can see industry sweeps like we had years ago involving the healthcare industry with pharmaceuticals and medical device companies. Another interesting case was SAP returning yet again to the enforcement arena and settlement arena. They've been involved in sanctions enforcement, and they reappeared in the FCPA arena after they had had a SEC settlement years ago for bribery involving Panama with the SEC. The DOJ and SEC settlement in this case, and it was somewhat controversial. People thought it was a little bit of a soft touch by DOJ. And I leave it to you to sort of come out on your own on this. But SAP paid $220 million for bribery in South Africa and Indonesia. The SEC violations extended into other countries, including Malawi, Kenya, Tanzania, Ghana, Azerbaijan, as well, and pervasive and systemic bribery schemes involving very common techniques. It was a three-year deferred prosecution agreement, no compliance monitor, and a 40% discount from the guideline range. In South Africa, from 2013 to 2017, SAP bribed local government officials from the National Electricity Company and the Water Authority to secure valuable contracts. In Indonesia, they paid bribes to government officials and included taking some of them on shopping and travel excursions. They used large commissions and circumvention of due diligence for suspect third parties. In Indonesia, they won some valuable contracts from the Ministry of Maritime Affairs and Fisheries and the state-owned telecommunications agency. Now, given the pervasive nature of this, how many countries were involved, people thought that this, you know, was a sort of sweetheart deal. Whether that's true or not, who knows? But, you know, they had an SEC settlement in 2021 for $8 million. They had sanctions violations as well in the last few years. And SAP nonetheless comes out with what I think is a pretty good settlement. Another big case was Raytheon, but this was not just about bribery. This also stretched into other areas. It was a comprehensive settlement by the Justice Department, involved the FCPA with the SEC, but more focused on fraud and ITAR violations. There was a three-year deferred prosecution agreement. $361 million penalty of the $950 was with regard to the FCPA. And there were bribery payments that were paid to Qatari officials who were part of the branch of the Qatar Air Force, being the Qatar Emiri Air Force, QEAF, and an independent compliance monitor was appointed. The bribery scheme, which was pretty interesting, was through a joint venture subsidiary, which bribed high-level officials at QEAF, and they secured four contract additions worth about $36 million in profits. And there was a sole source contract for Qatar with the Joint Operating Committee. So there were sham subcontracts for $2 million in defense-related studies, which were prepared by RTX employees, shared among the employees, and passed to the third party controlled by Qatari. The thing that was interesting was there was a $2 million defense-related study conducted, prepared, and then falsified by the RTX employees themselves, who were supposed to be securing these from third parties, these defense-related studies. They used personal email accounts and made obviously no reference to Raytheon employees. So be careful when you have your own employees preparing, conducting the work for supposedly a third party. Interesting technique. Another case, McKinsey & Company, DOJ, $122 million resolution for bribery in South Africa, a three-year deferred prosecution agreement with no monitor. The mastermind was a senior partner, Vikas Sagar, who pled guilty in 2022. Now, here's another example. He pleads guilty, he cooperates, and McKinsey ends up paying. Bribery payments were made to Transnet, which is a state-owned company, for operating ports, rails, and pipelines, and Eskom Holdings, a state-owned enterprise energy company. The second bribery cases involving Eskom in this year. So if you're dealing with Eskom, be very careful. McKinsey's bribery schemes involved Sagar, who orchestrated the whole thing, pled guilty again, remember, and cooperated, And he agreed with a foreign official to engage a local business because in South Africa, there's a local partner requirement. And the company engaged another intermediary to engage with Transnet as well. Sagar and the company split the consulting fees, and knowing that a portion of those fees would be paid to the foreign official and to the intermediary. And the foreign official then served as an inside man, provided confidential information, and made sure McKinsey was awarded multiple contracts. Interestingly, Sagar and the intermediary did nothing on the internet, did nothing in text. All their meetings were in person to avoid electronic records. At ESCOM, Sagar joined the ESCOM team. So he moves from the Transnet team to the ESCOM team. And what does he bring with it? Bribery. Second company employed, second intermediary engaged to meet local partner requirements, foreign official and the local intermediary split the fees 50-50, knowing that some were going to then go to the foreign official and the intermediary. Interestingly, the intermediary was rejected by McKinsey's due diligence because he would never respond to due diligence inquiries. But even after the rejection, McKinsey continued to work with the rejected third party. Okay, the Bitmining Unusual case, formerly called 500.com, and I think this came to DOJ's attention because Japan started to prosecute this case. 500.com was a Chinese company, former online sports betting company, and they had been put out of business by changes in China regulations and not allowing online sports betting. And 500.com paid $6 million to DOJ and $4 million to the SEC, and it was reduced from a $54 million penalty because of inability to pay. $2 million in bribes were paid to Japanese officials to get what? Valuable resort and casino rights. Japan opened up for the first time casinos and the right to develop casinos and shopping and hotels at various sites within Japan. Who orchestrated this? The CEO. CEO Pan, who was then indicted by the U.S. government, still in China, and I would imagine will stay there for fear of being arrested. Cash, travel, entertainment, and gifts were used to pay, financed by sham contracts with consultants, and they used these three local consultants to funnel bribes through lecture fees, sham consulting fees, and luxury travel to China, and then Macau and a subsequent ski trip for an official to Switzerland. All interesting ways of going about it. Here's an interesting case, and I'm going to highlight again the financing scheme. Telefonica settled for $85.2 million and a three-year deferred prosecution agreement for bribery involving Venezuelan officials. Bribery of payments totaled $28.87 million to secure valuable currency conversion to U.S. dollars. And Telefonica had to buy equipment and had to use U.S. dollars to buy the equipment from vendors in Venezuela because of the poor condition of the peso. And Telefonica concealed the illicit payments to government officials to win at currency auctions. And then they were able to convert their pesos into dollars. So Company A and Company B were the two vendors who in turn funneled the dollars to the foreign officials through an intermediary company and a shell company, both of which performed no services. But Telefonica financed the bribes by agreeing to purchase equipment, legitimate equipment, from Company A and Company B at inflated prices. And their intermediary spent more than $500,000, by the way, on a lavish vacation in St. Bart's for the foreign official and family members. How you spend $500,000 on a vacation, don't ask me. And they spent approximately $605,000 on luxury watches and jewelry in St. Bart's, including for the benefit of a foreign official and spouse. But remember again, inflated prices paid for legitimate equipment, which was then used to update Telefonica's, which is a Spanish subsidiary, cellular equipment and facilities in Venezuela. And very hard to detect and raises the question of, can your company detect inflated prices paid for equipment? And how sensitive are your reviewers in terms of that issue? Now, we also saw towards the end of the year, we had the AAR, Aviation Products and Services, AAR and Deepak Sharma, individual president of an AAR subsidiary, settled the AFCPA charges for bribery in Nepal and South Africa. AAR entered into a non-prosecution agreement, 18 months, and agreed to pay DOJ and the SEC a total of $55 million. Sharma pled guilty in June of 2024 and cooperated, and he resolved a separate case with the SEC by paying $184,000. In Nepal, Sharma orchestrated a bribery scheme to win contract for the sale of two Airbus A330 aircrafts worth $210 million to Nepal Airlines, a government-owned airline. AAR used a third-party agent to pay bribes to the Nepalese officials. In South Africa, Sharma paid millions in bribes to secure aviation services contracts with the South African Airways. DOJ did not give AAR credit for self-reporting because they were 12 days late. There was a public report of the bribery in a newspaper with regard to Nepal. AAR earned $24 million in profits from the bribes, but notice the aviation services, aviation industry with huge state-owned presence and bribery. Now, there was an interesting SEC case called the Moog case, where Moog and Aerospace Defense Industrial Motion Control Systems agreed to pay the SEC a penalty of $1.7 million. Bribes were paid through a subsidiary to three Indian state-owned enterprises to get on an approved supplier list, to eliminate competitors, and to tailor the qualification criteria to Moog-specific benefits. It looks like the case was small enough that DOJ did not prosecute and declined because they self-reported the case to DOJ, which then ultimately led to the SEC getting involved. The bribes were paid through high commissions to third parties and cash payments made by third parties directly to government officials, which were financed again by inflated and false invoices. Another SEC case, the Deere case. Deere paid $9.9 million for bribery payments made by a recently acquired German subsidiary to Thai government officials. What was cited here as the problem is one that you'll hear about often from me, which is deficient integration procedures. When you acquire a company, you've got to make sure you integrate them, update their controls. Here you had weak controls, which led to bribes to government officials in cash, sham consulting fees, extravagant fake factory visit trips to foreign countries, meals and numerous entertainment fees, and what reappeared, massage parlors, $58,000 in fees for Thai officials to go to massage parlors. And talk about reputational damage, that's it. Four foreign officials and two spouses were taken for fake factory visits in Germany, which never occurred. Instead, the group was taken to Switzerland to stay at luxury hotels. We had two declinations, one of which I'm going to talk about. The Boston Consulting Group paid $14 million, earned a declination for bribery payments to Angolan government officials, and the agents paid bribes to help Boston Consulting win 11 contracts with the Ministry of Economy and the National Bank of Angola for one contract, and they financed the bribery through commission payments of 20 to 35%. Unbelievably high. Obviously, red flags on our face. Let's quickly summarize at the end here. DOJ revisiting corporate enforcement and changes in policies, their continued focus on individual accountability. In April of 2024, DOJ announced a voluntary disclosure program for individuals to encourage individuals to report misconduct. And this intent here was to squeeze companies, because now if an individual beats the company to DOJ, the company gets hurt because it doesn't get the first in benefits. It'll be, for example, the second in benefits. And the DOJ later in the year started a whistleblower program. It's announced its own corporate whistleblower program modeled on the SEC's, now to focus on private companies and to get private equity companies, to get people from private equity companies to come in, because whistleblowers can earn significant payouts. If you're involved, one thing. If you're not involved, another thing. Whistleblowers who are not involved and report misconduct can earn a percentage of any forfeited recoveries. And a company, if the whistleblower is involved in the criminal conduct, they can then earn a declination or a pass or immunity, if you want to call it that. Usually involves cooperation as well. We also saw revisions to the evaluation of corporate compliance programs. And what DOJ was looking at here was to capture new technology, encourage data analytics, and to focus on the impact of artificial intelligence and how you use them in corporate compliance programs, but also how are you measuring and identifying your AI risks in managing the business uses and the use cases within DOJ. So emerging technologies such as AI are important. Data analytics and integration into your compliance program is another thing that DOJ is emphasizing, and corporate culture and speak up preservation. And one important issue that I always harp on, merger and acquisition integration. So remember that, please, please work on merger and acquisition integration. Okay, folks, that's a quick review. Please stay in touch with us if you need anything with regard to the FCPA compliance and enforcement. All the best, and we'll see you next week for another episode.
If you enjoyed this episode, the best way to support the show is by subscribing on your favorite listening platform. To learn more and connect with Michael Volkoff, go to volkovlaw.com.